Hello and welcome to Word Wisdom Wanderers, the podcast where we embark on a fascinating journey through the English language, uncovering the hidden stories and surprising connections behind everyday words, all through the lens of etymology.
And designed especially for our wonderful Chinese listeners. I'm Rachel, and I'm so excited to be here with you, Chris, for another adventure in word discovery.
Great to have you, Rachel. Today, we're diving into a topic that affects all of us at some point in our lives, medical healing, and specifically, the incredible specialists who dedicate their lives to keeping us healthy. We'll be looking at 10 different medical doctors and dissecting their names to understand what they do, all thanks to their ancient Greek and Latin roots.
That sounds fascinating. It's like peeking behind the curtain of language to see how these important titles were born. I'm sure our listeners, like me, often wonder about these names when they hear them in English.
Exactly. And to get us warmed up, I have some quick questions, almost like a little preview of what's to come. Rachel, can you guess the title of the doctor who specializes in internal medicine?
Internal medicine? That sounds like someone who deals with what's happening inside your body. I'm already curious to know the specific name.
Very good. How about the doctor who specializes in female ailments?
This one feels a bit more specific. I think I have an idea, but I'll keep it a secret for now.
And for pregnancy and childbirth?
Oh, delivering babies. That's a very special kind of doctor.
Indeed. What about the treatment and care of infants and young children?
Little ones. Every parent knows how crucial a good doctor for children is.
Absolutely. Next, skin disorders?
Skin, our largest organ. That sounds like a whole field in itself.
It truly is. How about diseases of the eye?
The windows to the soul, super important.
And heart problems?
The very core of our being. This is getting exciting.
The brain and nervous system?
The command center of our body, that must be a very complex specialty.
And finally, mental and emotional disturbances?
Our inner world. I can see how understanding the names for these specialists will help us understand their roles better.
You've got it. These questions are just a teaser, because over the next little while, we're going to explore all 10 of these medical specialists. We'll learn what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, what they are called, along with the fascinating origins of their names and many related words. It's going to be a journey of linguistic and medical discovery.
I can't wait. Let's dive in.
Wonderful. Let's start with our first specialist, the one who handles what's wrong with you. This doctor is crucial for anyone feeling generally unwell, or when you just don't know why you're not feeling your best. This specialist gives you a thorough physical examination, a really comprehensive checkup. And to get to the bottom of things, they use an impressive array of tests.
An impressive array, you say? What kind of tests are we talking about, Chris?
Well, the sources tell us they might include an X-ray, blood chemistry analysis, urinalysis, a cardiogram, and so on. Imagine, Rachel, you walk into their office, and they're not just looking at you on the surface. They are trying to find out what ails you and why by exploring your body's internal workings. This specialist is called an internist.
An internist? That sounds like such an important role, a sort of detective for your body trying to piece together the clues from all those tests. But Chris, the name internist makes me think of the word internal. Is there a connection?
You've hit on the core of it, Rachel. There's a very direct connection. The words internist and internal both come from the same Latin root, internus, which means inside. So, etymologically speaking, an internist is a specialist in internal medicine, someone who truly explores your insides.
Inside? That makes perfect sense. So they're looking for what's happening within your body to cause the troubles you're complaining of. It's like checking the internal components of a sophisticated machine, like a high-tech smartphone or a complicated automobile. You wouldn't just look at the screen or the paint. You'd open it up and see what's going on inside.
Precisely. They determine the state of your internal organs, examining all those crucial parts that keep you going. Think about the Chinese concept of nei ke, which directly translates to internal medicine. It aligns perfectly with the etymological meaning of internus. This physician is focused on your internal health, rather than external injuries or surgical needs.
That really clarifies it. So if I have a cough that won't go away, or persistent fatigue, an internist would be the first person I'd see to help figure out the internal cause. They are like the general practitioners of the inside of your body.
Exactly. They are the primary care physicians for your deeper systemic issues. But, Rachel, there's a common point of confusion that our listeners should be aware of. We're talking about an internist, but there's also the word intern.
Yes. I've heard that word before, often in hospitals. Are they related?
While both words share the same Latin root internus, meaning inside, their meanings in English are quite different in a medical context. An intern, and sometimes it's spelled intern, is a medical graduate who is serving an apprenticeship inside a hospital.
So an intern is like a medical resident or a trainee doctor gaining practical experience within the hospital setting, while an internist is the established specialist who practices internal medicine. That's a crucial distinction. It's like the difference between someone who has just graduated from a top cooking school doing an apprenticeship in a famous restaurant and the master chef who runs the entire kitchen. Both are inside the culinary world, but their roles and levels of experience are very different.
A perfect analogy, Rachel. So, remember, the internist is the seasoned expert in internal medicine exploring your insides, and the intern is the medical graduate learning the ropes, often inside the hospital walls. Both are important, but their roles are distinct.
Got it. No more confusing the master chef of internal organs with the culinary apprentice. That's a great start to our journey. What's next on our list of specialists?
Our next specialist deals with a very specific and important area, female troubles. This specialist treats the female reproductive and sexual organs. This is a field dedicated entirely to women's health. This physician is called a gynecologist.
Gynecologist. That's a word I hear quite often, especially when discussing women's health. So, this is the doctor a woman would see for routine checkups related to her reproductive system, or if she has any specific concerns in that area.
Precisely. They are the experts in the intricate and vital aspects of female anatomy and physiology. Now, let's unpack that word. The word gynecologist is built on two Greek roots. The first part, gyne, means woman.
Gyne for woman. That's very direct. And what's the second part?
The second part is logos, which means science. So, etymologically, gynecology is the science of women. And in actual use, it's the medical science of women.
The medical science of women. That makes so much sense. It's not just treating specific ailments, but truly understanding the female body scientifically. It reminds me of how some Chinese characters are formed, where combining two parts gives you a new, very descriptive meaning. For example, combining new woman with K, branch of study sound science, gives you Fuke, which is gynecology. The ancient Greeks were clearly thinking along similar lines.
A wonderful observation, Rachel. The linguistic pathways, even across different languages, often reflect a logical progression of thought. And for our listeners, the adjective form is gynecological, pronounced gyn or jin or jn, akyl.
So, a gynecological examination is an examination related to women's health. That's very clear. What's the next specialist, Chris? I feel like we're on a roll.
We are indeed. Our third specialist is one of the most celebrated figures in many families. The one you see when you're having a baby? This specialist delivers babies and takes care of the mother during and immediately after the period of her pregnancy. This incredibly important doctor is an obstetrician.
An obstetrician? They are there for one of life's most miraculous moments, bringing new life into the world and ensuring the mother's well-being. It's a role filled with immense responsibility and joy.
Absolutely. The word obstetrician comes from the Latin word obstetrix, which means midwife. And that Latin word obstetrix actually has its source in a Latin verb meaning to stand.
To stand? That's interesting. How does to stand connect to a midwife or an obstetrician?
It's quite evocative, actually. Midwives traditionally stand in front of the woman in labor to aid in the delivery of the infant. It paints a picture of constant presence, support, and active assistance during childbirth. They are literally standing by and standing in front of to help.
That's such a vivid image. It really brings the ancient meaning to life. They are literally standing there, supporting the new mother through one of the most challenging and beautiful experiences of her life. And this word obstetrician also ends with -ician, doesn't it? Like physician or musician.
You noticed, Rachel, that suffix -ician, comma, as we see in words like obstetrician, physician, musician, magician, electrician, and many others, consistently means expert. So, an obstetrician is an expert in the field of obstetrics, specifically in delivering babies and caring for mothers during pregnancy.
An expert who stands to aid. That sums it up perfectly. It also highlights the specialized knowledge and skill required. It's not just anyone who can deliver a baby. It takes an expert.
And speaking of the specialty itself, the field is called obstetrics, pronounced obstetrics. It's interesting to note that obstetrics has only become a respectable medical specialty within the last 150 years.
Really? Only 150 years? That's quite recent for such a fundamental aspect of human life. Why was that, Chris?
Historically, childbirth was often seen as a natural process handled by lay midwives, and the medical profession, dominated by men, sometimes considered it beneath their dignity. For example, as recently as 1834, Professor William P. DeWeese, who assumed the first chair of obstetrics at the University of Pennsylvania, had to brave considerable medical contempt and ridicule. Imagine, Rachel, being scorned for pioneering a field that is now universally recognized as vital and highly specialized.
That's incredible. It shows how much perceptions of medical specialties can change over time. It's a reminder that even today, some professions or areas of study might not receive the respect they deserve until much later. But thankfully, that perspective has shifted dramatically, and obstetricians are now rightly celebrated for their life-saving work.
Indeed. The adjective forms are obstetric, obstetric, or obstetrical, obstetrical. So, you might hear of obstetric care, or an obstetrical ward.
Excellent. Now, I understand the history and the roots of obstetrician. What's our fourth specialist?
Our fourth specialist focuses on the youngest members of our society. Is your baby ill? You know the common childhood maladies, don't you, Rachel? Things like mumps, whooping cough, chickenpox, measles. This specialist limits their practice to youngsters, taking care of babies directly after birth, supervising their diet, and watching over their growth and development. They also give them the crucial series of inoculations that have done so much to decrease infant mortality. And importantly, they often spend time soothing their anxious parents. This specialist is a pediatrician.
A pediatrician? Oh, they are absolutely essential. From immunizations to helping parents navigate everything from a common cold to more serious illnesses, pediatricians truly guide children through their most vulnerable years. And they often offer comfort to worried parents, which is just as important.
They certainly do. They're like guardians of childhood health. Now, let's break down the word pediatrician. It's a wonderful combination of three Greek elements. The first part is paidos, which means child.
Paidos, for child. Simple and clear.
Then we have iatreia, which means medical healing. And finally, our familiar suffix, ician, which means expert.
So a pediatrician is literally an expert in the medical healing of a child. That's incredibly precise and clear. The name itself tells you exactly what they do.
Exactly. And the specialty itself is called pediatrics, pronounced pediatrics. Etymologically, then, pediatrics is the medical healing of a child. The adjective is pediatric, pediatric. So, you have a pediatric ward in a hospital or a pediatric nurse.
That's fascinating how those Greek roots combine to form such a specific and meaningful term. It's like building blocks of language.
It is, indeed. But here's an interesting linguistic side note, Rachel. that our listeners, especially those learning English, might find useful. You see the letters PED at the beginning of pediatrician. This comes from Greek paidos, meaning child. But then you also see PED in words like pedestal, pedal, and pedestrian.
Oh, yes. Like a foot pedal or a pedestrian crossing. Those words are clearly related to feet. Are they connected to child?
That's the trick. Despite the identical spelling in English, the PD in pedestal, pedal, and pedestrian comes from the Latin root pedis, meaning foot. It has no relationship to the Greek paidos, meaning child.
Wow, that's a classic English language trap. Same spelling, totally different origin and meaning. It's like how in Chinese, two characters can look exactly the same but have different pronunciations and meanings depending on the context. You really have to know the roots.
Absolutely. It's why etymology is so powerful. It helps us avoid those confusions. Now, sticking with our Greek root paidos meaning child, we can explore some other fascinating words that are built upon it. One such word is pedagogy.
Pedagogy? That sounds like something related to education.
It is. Pedagogy combines paidos, child, with another Greek root, agogos, which means leading. So, etymologically, pedagogy is the leading of children.
Leading of children. That's very beautiful. So, it's about guiding them.
Exactly. And to what do you lead them? To learning, to development, to growth, to maturity. From the moment of birth, infants are led by adults. They are taught, first by parents and then by teachers, to be self-sufficient, to fit into the culture in which they are born. Hence, pedagogy, by derivation meaning the leading of a child, refers actually to the principles and methods of teaching.
That's a very comprehensive definition. So it's not just what you teach, but how you teach it, the methodology, the philosophy behind guiding young minds. In China, we have a rich tradition of educational thought, emphasizing different approaches to leading children towards knowledge and virtue. So college students majoring in education would take courses like the history of education, educational psychology, or principles of teaching, right?
Precisely. Those are standard pedagogy courses. The adjective form is pedagogical. Pedagogical. So, you might talk about pedagogical approaches or pedagogical theories.
I see. So, the method of teaching or leading children. That's very clear.
Now, here's another interesting turn in the road, Rachel. Someone who is versed in pedagogy is called a pedagogue, P-E-D-E-G-O-G.
A pedagogue. That sounds like a formal term for a teacher.
It does. But this word has an unhappy history. From its original neutral meaning of teacher, it has unfortunately deteriorated over time, to the point where today, it often refers to a narrow-minded, straight-laced, old-fashioned, or even dogmatic teacher.
Oh, really? So it went from a respectful term to one that implies someone who is rigid or inflexible in their teaching methods, like someone who strictly adheres to old ways, perhaps not embracing new ideas or individual student needs? That's quite a fall from grace for a word.
Indeed. It's a word of contempt and should be used with caution. It's not a compliment to call someone a pedagogue today. It's like saying someone is an old-school rigid disciplinarian rather than an inspiring educator.
That's a very important nuance for our listeners. It's a bit like how some classical Chinese terms, when used in a modern context, can sometimes carry a satirical or critical undertone. You really have to understand the modern connotations.
That's a perfect parallel. And staying with this root agogos, meaning leading, we find another word that has suffered a similar fate. Demagogue. D-M-A-G-O-G.
Demagogue, that's a strong word, often associated with politics, isn't it?
Very much so. By derivation, a demagogue is a leader, agogos, of the people, demos. But like pedagogue, its meaning has also deteriorated. Today, a demagogue is actually one who attempts, in essence, to mislead the people.
So, not a true leader of the people, but someone who manipulates them?
Precisely. They are often politicians who foment discontent among the masses, rousing them to a fever pitch by wild oratory, all in an attempt to be voted into office. Their goal is often to manipulate public emotion, rather than appeal to reason or present a well-thought-out vision.
That sounds very dangerous. They stir up emotions, perhaps make exaggerated promises, or blame others, just to gain power. We see this type of behavior in history, and even sometimes today, don't we, where someone uses powerful, emotional speeches to gather support, but their true intentions might be quite different.
Absolutely. And once elected, demagogues typically use their political power to further their own personal ambitions or fortunes. They prioritize their own gain over the well-being of the very people they claim to lead.
That's a very clear warning about how power can corrupt. It's like the saying, power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Many leaders throughout history, in countries all around the world, have been accused of this behavior, which is called demagoguery, demagogery. The adjective is demagogic, demagogic.
Exactly. So, from the pure act of leading children to the cynical act of misleading the people, these Greek roots show us how language can evolve, sometimes for the worse, reflecting societal changes and warnings. What an interesting detour from our medical specialists. But it beautifully illustrates the power of etymology.
It really does. I'll definitely remember to be cautious with pedagogue and to watch out for demagogues. Now, back to our medical experts. Who's next after the pediatrician?
Our fifth specialist keeps our outer covering in good shape. Skin clear? You know, the classic riddle asks, what is the best use for pig skin? The answer is, to keep the pig together.
Haha, that's a good one, and so true.
Human skin has a similar purpose, doesn't it? Fundamentally, it's what keeps us all in one piece. And just like our internal organs, our outer covering is subject to diseases and infections of various kinds. These can range from simple acne and eczemas to more serious conditions like impetigo, psoriasis, and even cancer. There is a specialist who treats all such skin diseases. This doctor is a dermatologist.
A dermatologist? Yes, they are the ones we turn to for everything from a stubborn zit to something much more concerning. Our skin is so visible and important for our appearance and overall health.
It truly is. It's our first line of defense and a mirror to our internal health. Now, let's look at the name. The dermatologist, whose specialty is dermatology, dermatol-ag, gets their name from the Greek root derma, which means skin.
Derma for skin. That's wonderfully direct and easy to remember. So, a dermatologist is a skin expert.
Absolutely. And once you know that derma means skin, you'll start seeing it everywhere in English words, and you'll immediately know there's some reference to skin. For example, think about a hypodermic, H-A-P-D-U-R-M-I-C needle.
A hypodermic needle, that's for injections, right?
Exactly. The Greek prefix hypos means under. So a hypodermic needle penetrates under the skin. It goes beneath the surface.
That's brilliant. Under the skin. So if someone gets an injection for a vaccine, it's often a hypodermic injection. That connection is so clear now.
It is. Another related word is epidermis. E-P-A-D-O-R-M-I-S. This is the outermost layer of your skin. The prefix epi means upon or outer.
The epidermis, so the layer on top of the skin. It's like the very surface, the part we can touch and see.
Exactly. Then there's a taxidermist. Taxidermist. What do you think a taxidermist does?
Taxi, like arrangement or preparation, and dermist for skin. So, someone who arranges or prepares skin.
Very close. A taxidermist, whose business is taxidermy, taxidermy, prepares, stuffs, and mounts the skins of animals. It's a craft that involves treating animal skins for display.
Ah, like preserving animals for museums or decorative purposes. That's a fascinating, albeit niche, profession. And it totally makes sense now with the skin root.
Indeed. Here's a fun one. A pachyderm. Pachyderm. What kind of animal do you imagine when you hear that?
Pachy? Sounds like thick, maybe? And derm for skin. A thick-skinned animal, like an elephant or a rhinoceros.
You've got it. A pachyderm is an animal with an unusually thick skin, like an elephant, hippopotamus, or rhinoceros.
Oh, I love that. That makes the word so memorable. It's a great example of how knowing the roots makes you smarter about the words.
And finally, a very common medical term, dermatitis, dermatitis. The suffix dash it is in medical terms typically indicates inflammation.
So, dermatitis would be an inflammation of the skin, like a rash or an irritation.
Precisely. Dermatitis is the general name for any skin inflammation, irritation, or infection. So, with just one Greek root, derma, you can unlock the meaning of so many English words related to skin. The adjective is dermatological, dermatological.
That's truly amazing, Chris. It's like discovering a secret code for so many English words. Thank you for that deep dive into derma. Who's our next specialist?
Our sixth specialist helps us navigate the world with our sight. Eyes okay? This physician specializes in disorders of vision, such as myopia, astigmatism, cataracts, and glaucoma. They may prescribe glasses, administer drugs, or even perform surgery to correct these conditions. This vital specialist is an ophthalmologist.
An ophthalmologist. This is the eye doctor who can really perform serious treatments, even surgery, for our eyes. Myopia, or nearsightedness, is so common among young people in China, so an ophthalmologist is a very important doctor for many families.
Absolutely. Their work is critical for maintaining one of our most precious senses. Now, let's look at the etymology of ophthalmologist. First, notice the PH preceding the TH in the spelling. It comes from the Greek root ophthalmos, which means eye.
Ophthalmos for eye. That's a new one for me.
And then, of course, we have logos, meaning science or study. So, an ophthalmologist is literally an expert in the science of the eye. The specialty is ophthalmology, ophthalmol-A-G, and the adjective is ophthalmological, ophthalmo-L-O-J-A-K-L.
That makes sense. It's the scientific study and treatment of the eye. But I also remember another word for an eye doctor, oculist. Is that related?
You're right to bring that up, Rachel. Oculist, oculist, is an earlier title for this physician, and it's still occasionally used. It comes from the Latin root oculus, which also means eye. So Greek ophthalmos and Latin oculus both mean eye.
How interesting that there are two ancient roots for the same body part. It's like how in Chinese you have both yan and mu for eye with slightly different connotations.
A great observation. And the Latin root oculus has also given us several other English words. For example, the adjective ocular. Ocular.
Ocular, that would mean relating to the eye, then?
Exactly. You might hear of ocular pain or ocular surgery. Then there's monocle, mon-a-col. The Greek prefix monos means one.
So monocle means a lens for one eye, like those characters in old movies, often from the British upper class, who would wear a single lens in one eye as a symbol of status or eccentricity.
Precisely. It's a very specific image associated with that word. And then we have binoculars, binoculars. The prefix bi means two.
So binoculars are field glasses that increase the range of two eyes. Perfect for bird watching or stargazing, that's another clear connection.
And here's a word that's strangely enough also built on oculus, the Latin root for eye, inoculate, inoculate.
Inoculate? Like getting a vaccine or an immunization. How on earth is that related to the eye? That seems completely unrelated.
It does seem strange, doesn't it? But when you are inoculated against a disease, an eye, puncture, or hole is made in your skin, through which serum is injected. Think of it like a small, eye-shaped opening.
Oh, wow. So the origin refers to the tiny hole or eye made by the needle. That's an amazing and quite unexpected etymological twist. I would never have guessed that. And the source also mentions that it's commonly misspelled with two N's, which is good to know.
It's a common mistake, but knowing the oculus root helps clarify the correct spelling and meaning. Now, there's another important distinction to make for our listeners, similar to our internist versus intern discussion. We've talked about the ophthalmologist or oculist, who is a medical specialist. But there are two other practitioners who also deal with the eye, and they are often confused with ophthalmologists. The optometrist, optometrist, and the optician, optician.
Yes, these three roles can be very confusing. What's the difference?
Let's clarify. Optometrists are not physicians. They do not perform surgery or administer drugs. What they do is measure vision, test for glaucoma, and prescribe and fit glasses.
So an optometrist is primarily focused on assessing your vision and making sure you have the right corrective lenses, but they won't operate on your eyes or give you medication.
Exactly. The word optometrist combines the Greek roots opsis or optikos, which means sight or vision, with metron, meaning measurement. So, an optometrist, by etymology, is literally one who measures vision. The specialty is optometry, optometry.
Measures vision. That's a perfect description of what they do. And what about the optician?
Opticians have an even more specific role. They fill an optometrist's or ophthalmologist's prescription. They are the experts who grind lenses according to those specifications. Crucially, they do not examine patients. They work with the prescription given by another professional.
So, an optician is like the skilled craftsman who takes the design from the architect, the optometrist or ophthalmologist, and builds the actual product, the glasses. They don't do the diagnosing or prescribing, but they make sure your glasses are perfectly crafted to your needs.
You've captured it perfectly, Rachel. The word optician is built on opsis or opticos, sight or vision, plus our familiar suffix, ition, meaning expert. So, an optician is an expert in optics, the making of lenses for sight. The specialty is optics, optics.
That clears up so much confusion. So we have the ophthalmologist, the medical eye doctor who can perform surgery, the optometrist, who measures your vision and prescribes glasses, and the optician, who makes and fits the glasses. Each has a distinct and essential role in eye care.
Exactly right. The adjectives for these are optometric, optometric, or optometrical, optometrical, for optometrists, and optical, O-P-T-K-L, for things related to light or vision, often used with opticians.
Fantastic. That was a really comprehensive explanation for eye care professionals. My vision of their roles is much clearer now.
Wonderful. Let's move on to our seventh specialist, who helps us with our structural integrity. How are your bones? This specialist deals with the skeletal structure of the body, treating a wide range of conditions. This includes bone fractures, slipped discs, clubfoot, curvature of the spine, and dislocations of the hip, among others. They may correct a condition either by surgery or by the use of braces or other appliances. This specialist is an orthopedist.
An orthopedist? They are the bone doctors, making sure our framework is strong and correctly aligned. From broken bones to correcting deformities, their work keeps us mobile and upright.
They are indeed essential for our physical movement and posture. Now let's dig into the name orthopedist. This word is quite descriptive of its historical origin. It comes from two Greek roots. The first is orthos, which means straight or correct.
Orthos for straight or correct? That sounds very precise.
And the second root is paidos, which, as we learned earlier, means child.
Child. So an orthopedist is literally someone who straightens children. That's a powerful image.
It is. The term was actually coined back in 1741 by the author of a textbook on the prevention of childhood diseases. At that time, one of the main concerns of practitioners of orthopedics, AW or the P-dics, was specifically the correction of spinal curvature in children.
That's fascinating historical context. So the name itself tells us about the origins of the specialty, even though it has evolved. I imagine issues like scoliosis would have been a major focus then.
Exactly. While the name literally means to straighten children. Today, the specialty treats deformities, injuries, and diseases of the bones and joints for adults as well as children, of course. They often use surgical procedures to correct these conditions. The adjective is orthopedic, A-W or the P-E, dick.
So an orthopedic surgeon or orthopedic treatment applies to anyone with bone or joint issues, not just children anymore. It's wonderful how the original meaning sheds light on the history of the field, even as it expands.
And speaking of straightening, the root orthos, straight or correct, is also found in another related field, orthodontia, A-W, the don she.
Orthodontia, I know that one. That's for teeth, isn't it? Braces and things like that.
You're absolutely right. Orthodontia, the straightening of teeth, is built on orthos, straight, plus odontos, which means tooth.
So a specialist who straightens teeth, that's so clear.
And the specialist, of course, is an orthodontist, A-W-R, the dentist. An orthodontist specializes in improving your bite, retracting buck teeth, and by means of braces and other techniques, seeing to it that every molar, incisor, bicuspid, and other teeth are exactly where they belong in your mouth.
That's something many of our listeners will be familiar with, as getting braces to straighten teeth is very common for young people in China. It's all about creating that perfect, straight smile. The adjective is orthodontic, A-U-R-T-H-O-D-O-N-T-I-C.
Precisely. So, whether it's straightening bones or straightening teeth, the Greek root orthos guides us to the core meaning.
That was a really clear explanation. Thanks, Chris. Now I won't confuse my orthopedist with my orthodontists. What's next?
Our eighth specialist deals with the very rhythm of life. Does your heart go pitter-patter? This specialist treats diseases of the heart and circulatory system. This doctor is a cardiologist.
A cardiologist? They are the guardians of our most vital organ, the heart. It's a field that commands immense respect, as heart health is central to overall well-being.
Absolutely. The heart is undeniably central to life. The word cardiologist combines two Greek roots. The first is cardia, which means heart.
Cardia for heart. That's another direct and powerful root.
And as you know, the second root is logos, meaning science. So, a cardiologist is literally a scientist of the heart, or an expert in the science of the heart. The specialty is cardiology, cardiolog, and the adjective is cardiological, cardiological.
That's so straightforward. It's truly the heart science. So if someone has high blood pressure or concerns about their heart rhythm, a cardiologist is the specialist they would see.
Exactly. And once you know that cardia means heart, many other related words become transparent. For example, a cardiac, K-H-R-D-I-A-C, condition refers to some malfunctioning of the heart.
So cardiac arrest means the heart stops functioning. That makes perfect sense.
Then there's a cardiogram, K-H-R-D-A-gram. The suffix gram often means a record or writing.
So a cardiogram is a record of the heartbeat, like an electrocardiogram, which measures the electrical activity of the heart.
Precisely. It's an electrically produced record of the heartbeat. And the instrument that produces this record is called a cardiograph, K-H-A-R-D-A-graph. The suffix dash graph here refers to the instrument that writes or records.
So the cardiograph is the machine, and the cardiogram is the output, the record of the heartbeat. That's really clear. Knowing cardia makes all these terms click into place.
It truly does. The heart, or cardia, is a powerful symbol, both literally and linguistically.
A wonderful insight into the heart of the matter. Who's our ninth specialist?
Our ninth specialist takes us into the command center of the body. Is your brain working? This physician specializes in the treatment of disorders of the brain, spinal cord, and the rest of the nervous system. This complex and vital field is handled by a neurologist.
A neurologist. They deal with the brain, the spinal cord, all those intricate nerves throughout our body. Conditions like strokes, epilepsy, or even persistent headaches would fall under their expertise. It must be an incredibly challenging and rewarding field.
It certainly is. They unravel the mysteries of our neural pathways. The word neurologist comes from the Greek root neuron, which means nerve.
Neuron for nerve. That's very straightforward, and it sounds so familiar from biology classes.
And again, we have logos, meaning science. So, a neurologist is an expert in the science of the nerves. The specialty is neurology, N-R-O-L-H-E-G-E-E. And the adjective is neurological, N-R-A-I-A-L-O-J-H-A-A-K-A-L.
So, neurological disorders are problems related to the nerves or the nervous system. That makes perfect sense.
Exactly. And knowing neuron, nerve, helps us understand several other related words. For instance, neuralgia, N-R-A-L-J-A. The Greek root algos means pain.
So, neuralgia means nerve pain, like a sharp shooting pain along a nerve.
Precisely. Neuralgia is acute pain along the nerves and their branches. Then there's neuritis, N-R-E-I-T-I-S. We've seen the suffix dash I-T-I-S before, meaning inflammation.
So neuritis is inflammation of the nerves, like when a nerve gets swollen and irritated.
That's right. These two terms describe direct physical conditions of the nerves. But now, here's where it gets interesting and can be a source of common misunderstanding. The word neurosis, N-R-O-S-I-S.
Neurosis? That sounds like a mental health term, not just a nerve problem. Is it related to neuron?
It is, etymologically speaking. Neurosis combines neuron, nerve, with the suffix osis, which means abnormal or diseased condition. So, by its roots, it seems to imply a diseased condition of the nerves. However, and this is a crucial distinction, a neurosis is not, despite its etymology, a disorder of the nerves.
Oh, wow. That's a very important point. So its name is misleading given its actual medical meaning today. What exactly is a neurosis then?
The late Eric Byrne, a psychiatrist, described it very clearly. He said a neurosis is an illness characterized by excessive use of energy for unproductive purposes so that personality development is hindered or stopped.
Excessive energy for unproductive purposes. That's a powerful description. Can you give us some examples of what that might look like, Chris?
Certainly. Byrne gave a few examples. A man who spends most of his time worrying about his health, counting his money, plotting revenge, or washing his hands can hope for little emotional growth.
Ah, I see. So it's not a physical nerve issue, but a pattern of excessive mental and emotional energy that gets trapped in repetitive, often unhelpful behaviors or thoughts. It's like being stuck in a loop, unable to move forward in life because so much energy is consumed by these unproductive mental activities. For example, some people might worry excessively about tiny details or feel compelled to check things multiple times, which can be very debilitating in daily life.
Exactly. The source implies these activities consume vast amounts of mental energy, leaving little for genuine personal growth or healthy engagement with the world. The word neurotic, N-R-O-T-I-K, is both the adjective form and the term for a person suffering from neurosis.
So one can say someone is neurotic or suffering from a neurosis. That's a very important distinction to make clear. The etymology points to nerves, but the actual meaning is about mental and emotional patterns, not nerve damage.
Precisely, Rachel. It's a great example of how a word's meaning can evolve beyond its original roots. And that brings us to our final specialist, who works deeply with the mind.
I'm ready.
Our 10th and final specialist deals with mental and emotional disturbances. This specialist attempts to alleviate these issues by means of various techniques, occasionally drugs or electroshock, but more often private or group psychotherapy. This is the psychiatrist.
A psychiatrist. They are the doctors who help people struggling with their mental health, using a range of treatments from therapy to medication. This is such a critical field, especially as we become more open about mental well-being.
Absolutely. Their work is vital for helping individuals achieve mental and emotional balance. Now, We just talked about neurosis not being a form of mental unbalance. So, what is a full-blown mental disorder called? It's called a psychosis. Psychosis.
Psychosis. That sounds much more serious than neurosis.
It is. The word psychosis is built on the Greek root psyche, which means spirit, soul, or mind, plus our suffix osis, meaning abnormal or diseased condition.
Diseased condition of the mind. That's very direct.
A true psychotic. Psychotic. And note that this word, like neurotic, is both a noun and an adjective, has lost contact with reality. At least with reality as most of us perceive it. The source adds that, no doubt psychotic people have their own form of reality.
Lost contact with reality. That's a very stark distinction from neurosis. It's a profound break from the shared understanding of the world. It must be very challenging for those experiencing it and for their families.
It is a severe condition requiring expert care. Now, let's tie this back to our specialist, a psychiatrist. This word is built on psyche, spirit, soul, or mind, plus iatria, which means medical healing.
So, a psychiatrist is, by etymology, a mind healer. That's a truly beautiful and accurate description of their role. They heal the mind.
Indeed. The specialty is psychiatry, sech or sake tri, and the adjective is psychiatric, psychiatric. So, you might hear of psychiatric treatment or a psychiatric hospital.
That's incredibly clear. From the physical care of the body to the delicate healing of the mind, these specialists truly cover the entire spectrum of human health.
They certainly do. And speaking of iatria, meaning medical healing, we've encountered it before. Do you remember where, Rachel?
Yes, we learned that pediatrics is also built on iatria, so medical healing of a child.
Excellent recall. And the sources also mention a couple of other medical specialties built on iatria. One that will be discussed in a future chapter is podiatry.
Oh, podiatry. I'm guessing that has something to do with feet since we talked about the Latin pedes for foot earlier?
You're absolutely right. While not fully detailed in these sources, the name certainly hints at it. And then there's geriatrics. Geriatrics.
Geriatrics, that sounds like it has to do with older people.
Exactly. Geriatrics is the specialty dealing with the particular medical needs of the elderly. This word combines iatria, medical healing, with the Greek root geras, which means old age.
Medical healing for old age, that's another perfect fit. With an aging global population, including in China, geriatric care is becoming increasingly important. It's wonderful that there are specialists dedicated to the unique health challenges faced by seniors. The specialist is a geriatrician, geriatrician, and the adjective is geriatric, geriatric.
Precisely. So, from children to the elderly, and from skin to the mind, we've seen how these ancient Greek and Latin roots provide such clear and logical foundations for the complex world of medical specialization.
Chris, this has been an incredibly enlightening journey. I feel like I've not only learned about these 10 crucial medical specialists, but also gained a much deeper understanding of how English words are constructed and how their meanings evolve.
I'm so glad to hear that, Rachel. We've covered the internist, the explorer of our insides. The gynecologist, the expert in the medical science of women. The obstetrician, the expert who stands to aid in childbirth. And the pediatrician, the expert in the medical healing of children, along with the fascinating and sometimes cautionary tales of pedagogy and demagoguery.
And we delved into the dermatologist, the skin expert, learning about all those derma words like hypodermic and dermatitis. Then we saw the ophthalmologist, the eye expert, and distinguished them from optometrists and opticians, realizing how many words come from Greek ophthalmos and Latin oculus, even inoculate.
And we understood the orthopedist, who straightens our bones, and how that orthos root also gives us the orthodontist, who straightens teeth. We explored the cardiologist, the heart expert, and how words like cardiac and cardiogram are built on cardia,
Finally, we learned about the neurologist, the nerve expert, and clarified the important difference between nerve-related pain like neuralgia and neuritis, and the emotional patterns of neurosis. And the psychiatrist, our mind healer, distinguishing between neurosis and the profound loss of reality in psychosis, and even touching upon geriatrics as the healing for old age.
What a fantastic summary, Rachel. Each of these specialists represents a profound body of knowledge, and their names, when understood through their etymological roots, become so much more meaningful. It's a reminder that language is alive, constantly evolving, but always rooted in history.
And for our Chinese listeners, I think understanding these roots makes English much less intimidating. It's like finding a key to unlock the meanings of complex words.
Absolutely. So, next time you hear one of these medical terms, I hope you'll feel a little thrill of recognition, understanding not just what the word means, but why it means what it does.
Thank you so much, Chris, for guiding us through this insightful journey. I feel much more confident about these medical terms now.
And thank you, Rachel, for your wonderful insights and questions. To all our listeners, thank you for joining us on Word Wisdom Wanderers. Keep an ear out for those fascinating word roots.
Yes, keep exploring the wonders of language. We'll be back soon with more linguistic adventures. Until then, take care and keep learning.
Goodbye, everyone.
Zaijian.